Welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and joining me is my co-host, Brad Harbin. How you doing, Brad?
Hey, what's up, Kyle? Doing well, man, down here in Jacksonville. It's an early spring for us, probably not for the rest of the country from what I hear, but I mean, there's no time off this year, man. We're right in the middle of off season, you know, stuff going on. So I mean, lots of stuff to think about. You know, the next couple months,
marching right through the season. Hey, look, it's March 1st.
Absolutely. Hey, it's March 1st. There you go.
It's funny because back-to-back days, I'm recording a Full Press Coverage podcast. For anyone watching, you'll see the Full Press Packers pod just released. Both episodes have similar topics, coaching changes, and my co-host Jesse and I did get into where we thought the best landing spots were, who we thought the best head coaches were.
Gotcha.
And funny enough, Jesse was talking about how he was cutting the grass and I was having a shovel because we had a blizzard. So,
right.
It's fun. This is March. Let's keep marching forward. And I think unlike the Packers podcast, this one will really focus on a lot of the offensive coordinators.
Sure.
And certainly the offensive landfalls and effects of these new head coaches. Again, talking about this for fantasy football. So we'll try and give kind of a fantasy spin, even if it's just a player that we either think will be, that will benefit from this or will see a decrease in this.
Absolutely.
So lots of head coach. Well, I guess, again, this is something I was talking about on the Packers podcast with Jesse. Less head coaching hires than last year. I believe last year we had 8 or 9.
Okay.
This year, only 5 new head coaches. And so those teams are the Arizona Cardinals. I almost said Coyotes for a second. Delta NHL trade deadline season. Both such well-run franchises. It's amazing.
Yeah.
in saying that, they hired Jonathan Gannon as their head coach. The Carolina Panthers, familiar face, at least as a former head coach with the Colts, who we'll talk about in a sec. But Carolina Panthers hired Frank Reich. Denver Broncos traded a first-round pick and signed Sean Payton. The Houston Texans getting D'Amico Ryans from the 49ers to be their head coach. And then, yes, the Indianapolis Colts. No, they didn't give Jeff Saturday the permanent head coaching job after they replaced him. They had him replace Frank Reich. It's Shane Steichen from the Eagles. So Eagles losing both primary coordinators and the former coordinator in Frank Reich. I guess, interesting. Like, yeah, one of these things is a little different than the others. And it's I hinted at it. The Broncos giving up a first-round pick for Sean Payton. So I guess we can start there. Most head coaches are just hired. There's not much draft compensation for former teams. So Brad, what did you think about that? I guess it's been a little bit since a team traded something for a coach, and that's what the Broncos did for Sean Payton.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta be honest. I'm that really kind of baffles me. I mean, I know. I guess what New Orleans still had the rights to him and all that stuff. I mean, it just seems very, a first round or two. I mean, it seems like a stretch, but I mean, Peyton certainly, he has the pedigree. He's got he's got one Super Bowl ring, comes in, with obviously, a great offensive mindset. But I don't know if I've seen anything like that in a while. I'm sure it's happened. You could probably remind me, but I feel like it's certainly odd. I mean, would that have been the situation no matter what team would have gone after Payton? Is that how that would have worked? Because he was still technically under contract with the Saints. Is that how that works? Or
yeah, I guess I'm less up to date on the coaching contract than I am, say, the player contract. So a little bit more of a grasp of that. So honestly, I have no idea. I know in the NHL, that's a super common thing to do, where even if a team fires a coach and they're still under contract, they have to pay a pick to that other team. Usually don't see first round picks get thrown around.
Yeah.
I guess that's the pedigree Sean Payton has, right? And
yeah, sure. I mean, he's definitely got some namesake for sure. Yeah, definitely.
You talked about it, the Super Bowl ring, but also the numbers and the success he's had specifically with the Saints. And I think of like what makes a Sean Payton offense. And then that's sort of like, when again, trying to give the fantasy spin on it, how do we think this affects fantasy football? And I guess the idea I came with is, we've seen like whoever is the primary wide receiver or even receiving threat, because there was a couple years where it was Jimmy Graham, but think back to Marquise Colston before that. It seems like, you know, recently we've seen a shining example of it with Michael Thomas. They will design him routes to get open consistently. And especially it seems like with Michael Thomas playing from the slot, that was really easy to do and get him open almost on every play. Now, we could say Michael Thomas maybe probably a little bit better than Jerry Jeudy, but that idea that Jerry Jeudy is this great route runner, can play in the slot, can kind of get open at will, I think he's the one that'll probably thrive in this Sean Payton offense. So my first kind of fantasy takeaway here is Sean Payton to Denver is a positive for Jerry Jeudy. And I know even into my dynasty rankings, anyone can look at that on fullpresscoverage.com. I've raised Jerry Jeudy up into, I believe, wide receiver 18.
Oh, wow.
As a result of this. And I guess I'm going to be buying into Jerry Jeudy pretty heavily this offseason, probably higher than I really ever have. So maybe that's a bit of an over-exaggeration, but I really do think he's the star that's kind of on the verge, that got that first round capital. Wasn't too long ago that the debate, okay, is it Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb? Who's the best receiver in the class? Obviously everyone was wrong. It was Justin Jefferson. Not only anyone said that, but you know, I think Judy's got the talent to fit in what we've seen Sean Payton's scheme do pretty consistently. So that would be my first fancy takeaway. Is there anything you want to take away from the Broncos here?
Well, I mean, I hate to agree with you, just with the amount of capital I have in Cortland Sutton on several teams. But I do agree with you. I mean, with that, the Sean Payton offense, I mean, you described it perfectly. I mean, really just, you know, targeting on a number one receiver, really like the slot guy. Jeudy in my opinion, I think he's a pretty polished route runner. We haven't really been able to see it too much with the caliber of the quarterbacks that have been you know, in Denver, but I do think that he is you know, gonna jump ahead of Cortland Sutton and be a you know, a major factor of that offense. I also like Dulcich, you know, coming into his second year. I like what he's able to do in an offense like that for Sean Payton, especially in the red zone. I think he's going to be a valuable asset as well. So I haven't gotten around to doing my rankings, but I mean, the 18 does seem kind of high, but I mean, but at the same time, I mean, I think you got to weigh some things, and you know, it's obviously a lot hinges on what Russell Wilson, you know, comes back in this season. But as far as the type of offense, I mean, I think you're spot on with Jeudy in the slot getting the majority of the target share.
All right, so moving on to the second team, we'll talk about the Carolina Panthers. I already mentioned that they hired Frank Reich, who was fired last year during the season by the Indianapolis Colts. Now, one of the things that he has done in sort of at least two of the three teams he's been with as either offensive coordinator, or in the case of the Colts, head coach, but specifically he did this with the Colts. I think we know, you know, which player was the main beneficiary of this in 2021, but he did this also with the Eagles back in 2017, and that is a top five rushing offense in yardage. And yes, Jonathan Taylor, 2021. The offensive line played really well, but yeah, having arguably the best running back in football in Jonathan Taylor probably did factor in there. Now, this 2017 Eagles running back room, I almost forgot what this consisted of. Do you remember any of the players on that team at running back specifically?
Wow, kind of caught me off guard there. I'm not off the top of my 2017. So that was
the year they won the Super Bowl.
They won their Super Bowl. LeGarrette Blount, I guess, mm-hmm. like later on.
He led the team in rushing yards.
Yeah.
766 yards, LeGarrette Blount. Wow. So great yeah. call.
Yeah. That's the only one I can think of off the top of my head. But yeah. Wow. Interesting.
It's funny because the first guy I went to and I realized, oh, wait, 2017, who were the running backs there? And I thought, oh, wait, they got Jay Ajayi that year. And they did. But kind of a ragtag group. LeGarrette Blount. Yeah. Jay Ajayi, Corey Clement, Wendell Smallwood. It's funny. Wendell Smallwood led all the running backs in receptions with 13.
Right.
So you know, I think Jonathan Taylor's shown he's done more than that already. So, but all this idea of saying like he's been able to produce these really great rushing offenses, and it's happened kind of in two ways. It's happened with the committee team, but then it also happened with the workhorse and Jonathan Taylor. And so I think it's a positive for the running backs on the Panthers. It's just, what idea will that be? And I think right now, Chuba Hubbard seems to be the only standout name in terms of who's we expect to be a significant contributor. But I also think, I don't know, Brad, I don't know about you, but I kind of expect the Panthers to add a running back to that room, whether it's via free agency. Do they re-sign Dante Foreman? Or perhaps they go out in the draft and take a running back with similar capital to Hubbard, maybe a little earlier. So I think it's positive for Chuba Hubbard in a sense, because I think he'll at least, like, I don't see him being completely replaced and then bringing in like a true workhorse back. I do expect it'll be a committee of some sort. And it really just does come down to, is Chuba Hubbard the lead back in that committee, or is he the second guy?
Sure.
I guess that's the quality of back they get will probably determine that more than Hubbard himself.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're definitely going to be a target in a running back. I'm thinking more so in the free agent period. I mean, I don't know if a Foreman. Foreman certainly had a few games last year where he shined. But I mean, some of the names that are out there. I mean, it looks like Fournette's going to be released by the Bucs. I mean, he's going to be looking for a home. I got a feeling he's probably going to be looking more for a contender because that's just his personality. But Carolina could be a contender. I mean, look at that NFC South. I mean, I think Reich going there, great opportunity, great situation for them to make some noise. And I would keep an eye out for a seasoned veteran to go in there and, you know, and I mean, I guess it kind of depends on who it is, if it's going to be a more of a committee approach, or if that, if that free agent is going to be, coming in and taking the bell cow. But I mean, it's going to be hard to see, but I guess sticking with Reich, if we can, with the quarterback situation, I know there's a lot of talk. I mean, Derek Carr's floating around out there, and we've heard some other names, but, what kind of impact do you think Reich would have on the passing game? And is DJ Moore going to be a thing again? He's definitely somebody I've had on the no list for several years now. Is his talent going to be able to come up and be showcased with Reich and an upgrade at quarterback?
Yeah, I think what we've seen with Frank Reich was the development of Carson Wentz. That's probably the one thing he's been able to hold his hat on. The one team he was with actually before the Eagles was the Chargers, but that was towards the end of the Phillip Rivers era. He was Chargers offensive coordinator from 2014, really just two seasons, 2014 and 2015. So sort of end phase Phillip Rivers in a sense. So he didn't really do much quarterback developing there. It's the quarterback play. I guess he got Phillip Rivers again in Indianapolis. He was a head coach there. Couldn't really develop a quarterback. It's funny because it looks like the Colts are about to draft a rookie quarterback that might have been helped by being developed by Frank Reich. Maybe the Panthers do that too. So I think if it's a young quarterback, I think that's going to be like help them develop to adjust to the NFL. I mean, if it's Derek Carr, they're like, I don't really see him making Derek Carr any better. I think we know who Derek Carr is. Now, what that might do is less for fantasy. And I guess unless you're a DJ Moore fan, maybe this is good. I think Frank Reich might have the ability to attract a quarterback. Someone will want to play for him. And I think it's not even necessarily about him as a quarterback developer. I think it's just him as a head coach. Certainly compared to the very impersonal style, we'll say, that the Panthers had the last couple of years. And not just entirely because of the coach. I think the front office had and ownership really had a part to do with that. So not going to put it all on Matt Rhule, but it does seem like Frank Reich's probably a coach players would want to play for him more than Matt Rhule. And again, not an NFL player here saying that, but just from what I've observed of how people have spoken about both and some of the things like I spoke with this on the Packers pod, the way the Panthers treated Cam Newton, right? They held on to him in free agency until after they signed Bridgewater and then released him. And then I think he had to play for like close to league minimum for the Patriots. And then I think, he got that second year contract with the Pats to get that money back. And made some incentives as well that first year. But it does seem like I don't know. It seems like it might be a draw for a guy like Derek Carr. And I suppose if Derek Carr goes to the Panthers, it's probably the best quarterback DJ Moore has played with.
Sure.
Because I think by the time DJ Moore got there towards the end, Cam Newton was kind of dealing a lot with those shoulder injuries and wasn't as effective of a quarterback as he was in his heyday, his MVP season. Mm-hmm. If he had that version of Cam Newton, I'd say probably not, because that version of Cam Newton is better than anything Derek Carr has done, I think. But
for sure.
More than anything, though, Brad, I think it does come down to the quarterback. I don't know. The coach can't.
Kind of a wait and see with Moore still. Yeah.
Yeah. He might be able to help the run game more easily than he can help the passing game if there is no quarterback. If there is a quarterback, again, I don't even know that Reich helps that. I think it's just the fact that having the good quality quarterback will make that offense better. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, it's something that crossed my mind driving home today. I was like, you know, is he actually going to be relevant again or, yeah, so I mean, there's always talk about it at the beginning of the year, DJ Moore, and I've always, I mean, especially like I said, last couple of years, I've kind of just stayed away, but yeah, I mean, it's gonna be interesting how things shake out in the next couple months for sure.
Moore has had one of the, you know, it's a strange career, we'll say, just in terms of how consistent the numbers had been for the last couple of years. three straight 1100 yard seasons with four touchdowns. I think we talked about that in the touchdown episode. I guess it was a series of episodes we did in the off season last year. The idea of touchdown regression. I think DJ Moore was going to hit a career high in touchdowns this year. I think I said six. I was close. He got seven, but he had 888 receiving yards.
Wow.
And he still had 118 targets. Which is, so this is the funny, this is the strange part to me. It's 2022 for DJ Moore was not that much different than 2020. 118 targets in both seasons. In 2020, he had 63 catches instead of 66. Sorry, he had 63 this past season, 66 in 2020. He had over 300 yards difference, though, receiving, and yet had more touchdowns the year when he had less yards. He had a career high. It's crazy. A career high on only 66 catches, but a career high 1,193 receiving yards. Pretty sure he led the league in yards per reception that year, 18.1. But then, you know, it's that three less catches and 300 less yards, and he gets three more touchdowns. This is just strange. So I have no idea what to expect with DJ Moore. Is he going to get this type of touchdown season? Is he going to get this type of yard season? You'd hope he at least gets one, because if he gets 800 yards and four touchdowns, then he's almost like below the threshold of ever wanting to start him. So
agreed. Yeah, I mean, I feel like he's certainly a name we're going to be bringing up the rest of the season at some point. So yeah,
I wonder if specifically in redraft, because I feel like his dynasty price is probably not going down for a long time. People just love him too much, but in redraft, he might be a lot cheaper than he's normally been this year, unless he gets a really good quarterback and then he gets a boost in value. So who knows?
Right.
It all comes down to quarterback play, doesn't it? Yep. Which, to be fair, we've been asking for DJ Moore his whole career.
Yep, exactly.
So the next team, going from Frank Reich's new team to his old team, the Indianapolis Colts. So Shane Steichen comes from the Philadelphia Eagles system. And the one thing I looked up with Shane Steichen is that 4 years in a row, he has had a top six passing offense or a top six rushing offense. And if you look at the teams he had with those, I mean, obviously the most recent one is the Eagles. But he had the Chargers before that, including Justin Herbert's beginnings and his rookie season. And so Justin Herbert's rookie season, they were sixth in the NFL in passing yards. And they ended up being the Chargers, that is 18th in rushing. Now it goes to the Eagles and it flips almost entirely. They have top five rush yard seasons both years, number one in rushing touchdowns both seasons.
Right.
And while the passing game increased in Philly this past year, they were ninth actually in 2022. Maybe a big help from AJ Brown there, and the emergence of Jalen Hurts as a true breakout candidate. But they were 25th that first year, and again, it comes down to quarterback play. But it also seemed like Hurts was not putting that quality play together. They were last in the league in attempts, so he really did design the offense around being run heavy and needing to do that. But then that he literally went from a year where he coached the team with the fifth most passing attempts to the team with the fewest passing attempts. So he really did make a huge adjustment in his scheme, style, and play calling going from the Chargers to the Eagles. And it seems like it was based entirely on the personnel. If what we said earlier, the Colts are getting a rookie quarterback, I'd imagine he does what he has done with the Eagles these last couple of years. He is going to be very run heavy. And probably because Jonathan Taylor is the most talented player there. Now, I guess my initial take was this is probably a good thing for Jonathan Taylor. If Steichen will sort of guide towards what the offense is best and most suited to do, it seems like it would be for a rookie quarterback to rely on the run game heavily. So in my sense, okay, a lot of attempts for Jonathan Taylor. But then you look at what the Eagles did last year. They ran a true three-way committee at running back. And so right. Do the Colts employ that type of committee? And does that actually become a negative for Taylor? So I'm actually having a little tough time knowing which side to be on there. If it's a positive for Taylor or is a negative. So I don't know. I think I know which side I lean, but what do you think, Brad?
I would have to lean with his talent and his, just ability to be effective in the passing game as well. I think it's gonna be I think they're gonna ride Jonathan Taylor. I don't really see a committee approach there. I mean, like you said, I mean Taylor is the most talented offensive weapon on that team. The coach is going into that situation. I think it's pretty much a no brainer that they're gonna be able to draft one of these quarterbacks here. I mean, which one? We'll find out. Also going into a situation going into the AFC South where, I mean, yes, the Jaguars are, kind of emerging, but you still have the Texans, you have a Titans team that seems like they're floundering, rebuilding. So a nice situation, especially for a rookie quarterback to go in there, lean on Jonathan Taylor. I don't really see Taylor's value slipping too much. Are you leaning a different way or?
No, I'm with you, and I think you said the key word when you first spoke about it, Jonathan Taylor's talent.
Sure.
As much as I do believe in Miles Sanders' talent, I don't think he's nearly as good of a running back as Taylor is. And as much as I believe in Deion Jackson's talent, I'm not sure many people do. I remember we talked about that rookie class. I was saying in my rookie tape, he was the second best running back behind only Najee Harris. Mm-hmm. Clearly a bunch of teams disagreed because he went as an undrafted free agent. And obviously I think most people would say Travis Etienne, Javonte Williams, even Michael Carter. I mean, a lot of people would say Trey Sermon, but I think from this point, Deion Jackson's done more in the NFL than Trey Sermon has. So I'll take the win on that one. Yes. Ramondre was in that class though. Although I was pretty high Ramondre tape wise. Yeah. I don't think Deion Jackson's really going to eat into Jonathan Taylor's work as much as Kenneth Gainwell and to a certain extent Boston Scott, but Kenneth Gainwell, I think especially, took a lot away from Miles Sanders. I think Absolutely. Their talent closely resembles one another. And I think as much as I like Deion Jackson, I think there is still a pretty big gap between him and Jonathan Taylor. Now, like we said with the Panthers, the Colts could also add a running back. I guess we'll see. If they add one of significance, maybe it becomes less of a, Taylor's getting 80 to 90% of the work, and maybe it's a 60-40 split to keep Taylor fresh. So I think for now, I'm leaning it's a positive for Jonathan Taylor. He could rebound and be the RB1 this year.
I absolutely agree. Like I said, definitely in that division, but if there's a, rookie signal caller back there, they're going to lean on him heavily, and he's certainly going to be a candidate to be RB1.
Now, Steichen, the former Eagles offense coordinator, left, and the Eagles also lost their defensive coordinator from last season, Jonathan Gannon, as he joined the Cardinals as head coach. Now, for fantasy purposes, I don't know that we're going to gain much of anything from a defensive disciplined head coach, as a hiring. Now, what I thought was at least drawing more attention is, who he chose as his offensive coordinator. So, Drew Petzing. He is I actually can't even remember what team he was with before, but he has never been a play caller or even an offensive coordinator. Well, yeah, I mean, a lot of times, first time offensive coordinator for some people, But right. He's never been an offense coordinator. He's never called plays. So I just got to look up where he was before. But
so just rewind back to your previous comment about the Arizona franchises. So, yeah, I mean, that's a little bit of a head scratcher for me right now. I mean,
yeah, so he's kind of been in a few places. Yeah, I went back to see the resume. Yeah, it looks like he was a graduate assistant 2009 at Harvard, actually.
Oh. Well, then
started. It's funny. He started as an outside linebackers coach at Yale when he first got into the positional side of things. Interned with the Browns, assisted with the Vikings. Looks like he was with the Vikings from 2014 to 2018. Eventually worked his way up to assistant quarterback coach, or actually he was the wide receiver coach for the Vikings in 2019. Tight ends coach for the Browns for a couple of years, quarterback coach as well, and now goes to offensive coordinator. So, you know, at least the quarterback coach, meaning he's worked with a quarterback
right
closely. So that'll be a kind of a big thing, how, you know, his ability to work with Kyler Murray, for instance. But I think the problem that I'm a little worried, I'm quite worried with the Cardinals this year offensively. There's a couple of key players I like. I think Marquise Brown, regardless of who's quarterback, probably should just get enough targets to at least be relevant and worth it. But there are very few Cardinals players after him I'm really excited to have in fantasy this year. And I think, frankly, the major factor, coaching aside, it's Kyler Murray's ACL tear. I mean, if they're without their starting quarterback for most of the season, I don't expect the offense will be very good. Depends who they get as a backup. Is it just Colt McCoy? Is he going to start most games? Not too crazy about that. But I think even one of the things that's a little scary, and I think that the Cardinals didn't necessarily learn from this, part of my worry with Cliff Kingsbury was the lack of experience. They're getting another first-time head coach. And as a first-time head coach, he also put a first-time play caller in place.
Yeah.
I would have been more okay with Petzig as a first-time play caller if it was a head coach that had previous head coaching experience, can kind of tutor him and there, but this entire staff will kind of be learning on the go, and they're not going to have their starting quarterback. Like, I'm already getting really not great vibes fantasy wise from the Cardinals. So my takeaway is this is just negative for the entire team. But yeah. That's sorry for being pessimistic, Cardinals fans.
No, I mean, I can completely agree. I mean, there were enough assistant coaches out there with head coaching experience that I would think would benefit a first-time head coach, especially in Arizona with, you know, without your starting quarterback for probably the majority of this season. But I mean, they decided not to go that route. I mean, obviously it looks like in Arizona they're going to have a little bit of a loose chain, try and get through this season. But yeah, nobody's really standing out for me there. Not even, you know, the second year tight end. I mean, Trey McBride came in with a lot of hype as the, I think he was the first tight end taken. I imagine he was on everybody's board, but, you know, he didn't really, amount to much. Connor certainly regressed from the 2021 season. Not too much to be excited about in the desert. I mean, they're going to be, scraping the bottom of that NFC West for sure.
Oh, they're going to draft Bijan Robinson and ruin that for all of us, aren't they?
There you go.
anyway, that's a happy thought. Okay, well, let's go to the Houston Texans because that'll give us more happy thoughts. So the Texans hired D'Amico Ryans, former 49ers defensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it, you know, part of this is a larger discussion is, you know, what the Texans have done at head coach the last couple of years. David Culley, minority head coach hired, fired immediately after at the end of the season. Then they hired Lovie Smith, another minority coach, fired at the end of that season. So D'Amico Ryans, a minority hire, also, I guess, insisted on the longer term contract. I believe Sean Payton's making more money per season. And mm-hmm. again, the Denver Broncos paid a first round pick. So the cost and what they're paying Payton is much bigger. But D'Amico Ryans signed a 6-year contract with the Houston Texans. So they're very inverse incentivized to fire him after a season, not to pay him out a lot of money if they do so. Now, again, first time head coach, to be fair, is also hiring a first-time play caller again. So I did kind of criticize the Cardinals for that. To be fair, I probably should have the same criticisms with the Texans.
Sure.
Now, the other thing, too, is who Ryan's chose to bring with him from San Francisco specifically. So his offensive coordinator is Bobby Slowick, and he's been with the 49ers since 2017. And before that, he was a defensive assistant for Washington for a couple years. So that would have, again, been under Kyle Shanahan, 2011 to 2013. So that's that time with, when Shanahan was there.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so that's where, probably he gained exposure to that Kyle Shanahan offensive style. And with Ryan's getting hired and then picking someone from that staff, I'd imagine he tries to kind of employ the Shanahan system. Now, that's easier said than done, to be fair. But I guess one of the things we expect is probably run heavy. And again, it's similar to what the Colts just did, or what we were talking about earlier. Sorry, what we just talked about with the Colts, especially if they're having if they will be drafting a quarterback in the first round and they're building around a young franchise quarterback, you'd imagine they're going to be pretty run heavy. So I guess my first instinct is it's probably a positive for Damian Pierce. But then again, it's funny. Should have done this one after the Colts because it's the same kind of argument. Right. Is it a committee? Because that's what the 49ers have tended to do is they'll run it as a running back committee. And that being said, McCaffrey came in and got a ton of work, especially as the season went on. So talent does kind of win out. So is our first positive talk going towards Damian Pierce here?
Yeah, that's interesting. And I appreciate you, letting us know about the San Francisco connection and the Shanahan connection. Cause I think that's an important part. I mean, I feel like I would lean more towards him as a offensive coordinator as opposed to the Arizona one. Yeah. I mean, Pierce certainly showed what he could do last year. I told everybody, what he could bring to the table. But Shanahan's like that committee approach. I'm not sure who else is gonna be there right now. I mean, it sounds like Burkhead might be flying the coop, but the Texans can certainly be aggressive in free agency as well. Try and pick somebody up. But I do feel it's going to be a run heavy, and with that Shanahan, kind of mindset and kind of, how it's been in the past, I don't know if it's going to be a full committee, but I don't think it's going to be, all Pierce all the time. I think you are going to see somebody come in there and get, 8 to 10 touches a game, give them a little bit of a breather to try and get things going. But it is going to be run heavy, most likely. I mean, with a rookie quarterback back there and just the lack of weapons that they have on the outside. So, I think run heavy, but I don't think it's going to be all on the shoulders of Pierce, at least not this year. There's a possibility he could have a wonderful sophomore season and things could change in the near future.
Yeah, I do think, like last year, if I'm not mistaken, there were times, especially early in the season, where Pierce really wasn't on the field for third downs, was not catching passes, but then later on kind of got, worked his way into that role. So there were times when Rex Burkhead was the designated third down back. There were times when it was Dario Ogunbowale. So I could still maybe see that type of split happening where they bring in a designated third down back, but I would imagine also Pierce is probably going to get the majority of carries. Now, I suppose the one thing could happen is, do they draft another running back? Maybe again, a fourth round running back early day three capital, like they did with Pierce. And it really is a 50-50 split. That's probably the biggest risk for him.
Yeah.
But like you said, the lack of wide receivers, especially, means they're probably going to be draft heavy on the wide receivers. So right now, assuming Brandon Cooks is no longer going to be on the team.
That's what it sounds like. Yeah.
It looks like Nico Collins is the wide receiver one. Now, I guess, you know, thinking of, you know, recent 49ers wide receiver ones, like I think of Debo Samuel. And I mean, it's not really probably another wide receiver quite like Debo, but his ability to run the football and run it in so many different ways, whether it's to the outside and like end arounds or jet sweeps and those type of things, which, you know, is fairly common to see from receivers, but also how much they utilize him in the backfield. I mean, this is Randall Cobb pushed to like 11, like this is pushed to the extreme, right to the Spinal Tap. And that probably doesn't make any sense. I just wanted to get the movie reference in there for those who didn't get the 11 joke.
I like it.
But yeah, I guess 11. Usually that's about the number of losses the Texans have every year. But if not more. But yeah, it's tough to see a huge positive for really any of the receivers because it'll probably be a rookie quarterback. So yeah, like, you know, Houston Texans, Indianapolis Colts are kind of in similar situations. New head coaches about to be tied likely to new rookie franchise quarterback. So the idea there is buy the running backs. I don't know. I that's been my suggestion for a lot of teams here, but it just seems like those two teams, it's, you know, and I mean, you're paying various degrees of prices for Jonathan Taylor than you are Damian Pierce. They probably won't cost the same in a dynasty league or where you'll draft them in redraft leagues, but they both seem like good options, even though, you know, I think, okay, rookie quarterbacks, you worry about the offenses overall not scoring enough. And we, okay, maybe don't want to invest too heavily in running backs and those types of offenses. But at the same time, the opportunity should also be, you know, there's few workhorse backs left really in the NFL. So if either Taylor or Pierce appears to be kind of in that mold of getting that type of touches, that should boost them a little bit in where they're going in drafts.
Sure. And I'm not going to be surprised if Pierce does start being utilized in the passing game. I mean, in a small sample size of Florida, because like I said, the coaching staff there for some reason didn't play him as much. Anyway, that's another podcast, but he has good hands. I mean, very effective. I mean, he could surprise the new coaching staff and be utilized. I mean, similar, you know, to the hands of Fournette that you know kind of went unnoticed during the draft, but you know, really kind of, you know, started to materialize a little bit in Jacksonville, and then of course you know what he did in Tampa, where he was you know, certainly a safety net for Brady. I think Pierce has that capability to catch the ball out of the backfield, which is going to do nothing but obviously shoot his stock up fantasy wise.
So now we'll get to talking into some, I guess, the last two teams we really talk about offensive coordinators with new head coaches. But now we'll talk about kind of the offensive coordinators who are joining teams with already established head coaches. And I guess we could start in a couple spots, but Brad, do we want to start with Todd Monken, who is the Baltimore Ravens head coach, as they decided to move on from Greg Roman?
Yeah. I mean, being down here in the South, watching Todd Monken the last couple years lead the Georgia Bulldogs to national championships. Obviously, Georgia had the superior athletes, but the way that his offense would work is he would almost – so in the past, historically, before Georgia, you know, got on this run, they were, you know, run the ball, you know, SEC, you know, three yards, cloud of dust. But Monken kind of – it's kind of weird. He surprised people with a run with, you know, some of those running backs here. The James Cook, obviously, you know, being one of them, but where he is most effective is getting the ball to the tight ends, and that's what Baltimore has. I mean, between Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely, I like both of them. You know, heading into the year, I think Likely certainly gets a boost. I think you're going to see some double tight end sets. I mean, even more so than you have. He's creative and making the mismatches with the tight ends and getting them open in space across the middle and down the sideline as well. So, I mean, I think it's a very, very nice hire. Munkin's certainly been around the block, but he's certainly on a roll. He was a hot commodity, and he's going into a great situation with two tight ends that he truly likes.
Well, to mention tight ends, this for Mark Andrews to kind of sustain his role as a true difference maker as a tight end, he's kind of got two things working in his favor then. And one of them seems like it's solidified as Todd Monken will be his offensive coordinator. So even if there is the second thing that happens and you know isn't there where they get a quarterback change, then it may not be as mitigate a bit of the effects of losing Lamar Jackson, who the reason he's the other aspect is because he has been, he has heavily targeted Mark Andrews, and quality targets over the middle seems better than on the outside. So, Yeah, I think this is, being a positive for Andrews makes sense. Just looking up some of Munkin's numbers in terms of previous NFL experience, where his team's ranked, and for as run heavy a team as the Ravens is, this is a little bit of a strange sort of hire because of that. So he was offensive coordinator with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 2016 to 2018, and then 1 year with the Browns in 2019 before you mentioned his tenure with Georgia. And so looking at his first year in 2016, the Buccaneers had the seventh most pass rush attempts in the league. But then all three other years he was an NFL offensive coordinator, his teams were outside the top 20 in rush attempts. Now, I think at Georgia, it was probably more of a run-heavy approach, and maybe with the Ravens, that's how he goes too. But is this the type of offensive coordinator that maybe, if let's say Lamar Jackson stays intact, this is maybe even more so than Andrews, it's a boost for Lamar Jackson and his passing numbers.
Yes.
Maybe this is a good thing for Bateman, to be honest, as what it looks like to be probably the second leading target on the team and number one wide receiver. Unless, of course, the Ravens decide to address that position, whether it's free agency or the draft.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think Munkin going to Baltimore is gonna be a boost for Lamar if whatever happens with that contract there for him. But I mean, it certainly Lamar fits that offense and his style. The play action pass, obviously the running game, and Munkin's gonna be able to utilize those weapons, and Bateman could certainly be a dark horse. I mean, we've certainly been waiting a couple of years for him to be a valid member of the Ravens and contributor. So this is a great opportunity for him to benefit from that running game and get open on the outside.
So a couple teams here that are connected, Kellen Moore and the Dallas Cowboys mutually agreed to part ways. So the offensive coordinator left for a lateral position with the Chargers as their offensive coordinator. But Dallas chose to replace Kellen Moore with Brian Schottenheimer, who I was almost shocked to read. He's been an offensive coordinator in the NFL for 12 seasons already.
Wow.
Now,
yeah, that's a surprise. I know he had a cup of coffee here in Jacksonville as a quarterback coach, I believe, if I remember right.
And it's funny because, 12 years, it was shocking to see that number of just longevity. And then the one thing that surprised me, he's never had an offense, a passing offense, rank higher than 14th in passing yards ever. And that was with Russell Wilson when he was offensive coordinator with the Seahawks. And maybe that's kind of where Dak's going to be at. But I think right now, I think maybe the opposite of Todd Monken being an increase for the quarterback, I think my big takeaway is this might be a downgrade for Dak Prescott a little bit. And I'm a little concerned that this could revert back to, say, rookie Dak Prescott being so run heavy.
Mm-hmm.
But then will Dak Prescott, because part of the appeal of Dak Prescott those couple of years is he was as a rushing quarterback running in like six touchdowns a year, as well as the accompanying yards. If he's not part of that and it's a run heavy team, you're losing maybe quite a bit of floor with him, and also the lack of upside if they're going to be so run heavy and especially in the red zone take away touchdowns. So,
right.
I think there's some concern for me with Dak a little bit here. Not enough to maybe say, knock him out of the top 12, but he's probably like at the back end of that top 12.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would put him at, 10 or 11. This hire, was certainly shocking. I don't know if it, going there, it's the last name or the fact that he's been, obviously a, you said 12 years, but yeah, I mean, I Schottenheimer and his play calling abilities never really impressed me. Obviously, the numbers don't lie. You know, hasn't finished higher than 14th, I guess. Offense, I think, is what you said. Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a shock. I see Prescott's numbers, you know, regressing a little bit. I mean, sure, there's still Lamb there. There's still some talented running backs. Schultz, Schultz, at tight end. But I think that Dallas still has a couple pieces that are missing there. I mean, I think that Prescott and Lamb are impacted by this hire. And they, yeah.
I almost think Lamb might be okay based on pure volume. I would actually worry more about like a Michael Gallup. I think his upside really shrinks. Lamb, I think I'd be okay with just based on sheer volume. Even if Dak's not doing well, it probably most of his targets will go to Lamb anyway. Sure. And truth with Schultz is we have no idea if he's even on the team. So that might be his situation less than his coach and who his quarterback is might dictate more of Schultz's value, I think. But yeah,
gotcha.
I think Gallup is probably someone I'm probably maybe looking to avoid as much as I would have thought, okay, bad year last year, but he was coming off the ACL tear. Maybe the second year after he gets back to the form. I don't know if this is really to start off this year, it's already seems like starting off on the wrong foot and not being a positive in the direction of Michael Gallup or really Dak Prescott, who has struggled with injury. Well, he had that ankle injury and since then kind of lacked the upside.
Sure. And is my boy Pollard a free agent or what?
I believe he is. Yeah. So yeah. Pollard may not return to the Cowboys either. Because the one thing I was going to say, if we're talking about so much negatives against the passing game, is it a positive for the run game? Like this must be a positive for Zeke.
Yeah.
But it's just positive for Zeke. Let's say if Pollard doesn't come back on a big contract and they make him the guy, or I suppose it could be franchise tag too. Oh God, do they draft Bijan Robinson? Suppose I. Probably don't hate that as much as I do the Cardinals, to be honest, if I'm a Bijan fan. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But just talking about, what the Cowboys are losing in the sense of, maybe it's Schultz, maybe Pollard, maybe they get either. But we know that they, again, changed offensive coordinators because Kellen Moore, as mentioned, went to the Chargers. Now, this is after spending 4 years as the Dallas Cowboys offensive coordinator. Two of his years there, so half the time, they were the top overall offense in yards, total yards, and then second in passing yards. So, again, part of Kellen Moore, former quarterback, maybe that connection with Dak in terms of it being in the quarterback room maybe helped that, and then you sort of lose that. So I guess it made sense we were talking about for Dak, it's kind of a downgrade. I do kind of expect somewhat of a bounce back year for Justin Herbert this season. He was QB2 the year before, and now this year, I think he finished outside the top 12, honestly. So somewhere in the middle ground probably is the true Justin Herbert. So kind of like with the Cowboys, to me, the biggest takeaway was at quarterback, and this one, same thing with the Chargers, because of, again, that common link of Kellen Moore, but this moving in the positive direction, I think, for Justin Herbert.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Kellen Moore is smiling ear to ear behind that little big menu of play calls. I mean, what a great situation to go from Dallas where he, he had success, obviously, you just mentioned it, but to go and with a young, rising star with Herbert, with that offense, with Eckler, that passing game, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen still around. I mean, just so many weapons. If they can all stay on the field, once again, the Chargers could be prolific. And I really like Herbert as well. I think he's going to be able to have that bond, similar to what Dak had with Kellen Moore. And I really Herbert is certainly somebody I have my eye on in redraft.
Yeah, last year would have been awful to take him in redraft. Sometimes in the second round, at times we I think we spoke about that.
Right.
That seemed a little too much. And then, coming off disappointing, I expect maybe even an overcorrection in terms of some teams will just, or some managers will just say, okay, he burned me so bad last year, just spending so early that they'll bypass him even further than they should. So, I'll take him. Yeah, no, I think Herbert's a good buy low. And even from a dynasty perspective, he's probably cheaper now in dynasty than he has been since he started a game. because he came out firing from the get-go, and I think people, right, as soon as he started, people almost immediately elevated him. Mean, like halfway through that season, he was already probably considered a top five dynasty quarterback, and now might be one of the times where he's maybe not falling out of the top five, but he might be firmly that number five. You're probably going to see Mahomes and Allen, of course, go ahead of him. Because even at his height, I don't think he was ever going ahead of those two in mini drafts. Certainly not Josh Allen. But yeah, I think Jalen Hurts, same initials, but Joe Burrow, I think, probably have eclipsed him a little bit. So
I can agree with that. Sure.
Yeah. Now, a couple things here, because there are a few teams where my main takeaway from the offensive coordinator change is I don't expect very much will change. Now, some of them are for the players themselves, and some of them it's actually is the coach, the familiarity with the system, something they've been part of. So I guess to me, the two I just want to kind of, and I mean, you could let me know if you think I'm wrong here, Brad, but the Eagles and the Titans, I believe the Eagles hired Brian Johnson, at least that's where the reports are, to be their offensive mm-hmm. coordinator. It's an internal hire. I believe he was the quarterback's coach.
So I think that sounds right. Yeah, I think you're right.
The Tennessee Titans with Tim Kelly, I believe, did the same thing. Promote from within. The thing about both those offenses, very unique. There's the power run offense the Eagles have, especially from the quarterback position, is really unmatched by any other team. And if that's sort of an edge they have, I don't really see them going away from it and totally changing the offense. I think that the offense kind of went through some changes with personnel and took strides. So I think you just build off that and you add new creative things to the offense, but sure. I don't think it's going to change at all. And then the Titans, their offense has kind of always been based around Derrick Henry the last few years. So it seems like two or three offensive coordinators that they've gone up, and it's all been promoted from within, and it's just keep that same philosophy. So I don't really think there's much to say about really the Eagles or Titans changes.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. I mean, certainly opportunities, two franchises where you can do that. You can promote from within with, you know, that workhorse back in Tennessee. And then, I mean, exactly what you said. And with the Eagles, I mean, what they did, obviously getting to the Super Bowl, you don't want to tinker with that too much.
One of the things we've talked about, or at least I've mentioned, is that, you know, the Shanahan tree, and I think this is connecting Shanahan to Sean McVay, but Mike LaFleur, I guess, mutually agreed to part ways from the Jets or was fired or whatever. Under Robert Saleh, former Kyle Shanahan coordinator. Right. So they've kind of grown, sort of trying to replicate that Kyle Shanahan system with the Jets. Now LaFleur goes from that to kind of a familiar face that he worked with the Rams, and Sean McVay, they're all together in Washington. So was Mike LaFleur's brother, Matt LaFleur. So they all kind of developed their system there. And really, I don't think the Rams offense is going to change because it's still Sean McVay's system. So I think the Mike LaFleur, it's about comfortability for him. It's also about comfortability for Sean McVay because he gets someone he's worked with before. So I think the offense just stays the same because of the coaching. But now Mike LaFleur's replacement, Nathaniel Hackett, I know he was the former Jaguars offensive coordinator at a time when the Jaguars made it to the AFC championship game. So I know a high time for a lot of Jaguars fans, but what do you think about this Nathaniel Hackett hire for the Jets? Obviously not as head coach. I think after the disaster that was the Broncos last year, he wasn't going to get probably another shot to be head coach, unfortunately for him. But what do you think of Nathaniel Hackett as an offensive coordinator?
He's certainly walking to a place that has some pieces. I mean, he's got to be giddy. I mean, it's definitely more pieces than he had here in Jacksonville or really anywhere else that he has. I mean, of course, the one question mark, kind of surrounding the quarterback situation. But I mean, to have, Breece Hall and Garrett Wilson, to go in there and make things happen. I mean, he never really, lit up the scoreboard too much. I mean, he was a little conservative when he was here in Jacksonville, but a lot of that had to do with Bortles as a quarterback. I think a lot of what happens in with Hackett with the Jets is going to be hinging on that quarterback decision. What are your thoughts? Because, I mean, obviously he was in Green Bay for a little while too.
And I think that the – at least with the Jaguars, from what I understand, it was his offensive system that he desired for Blake Bortles. Whereas with Green Bay, he didn't really, he just called and really understood well and called well, but he still just didn't create the system in Green Bay. That was Matt LaFleur's system. Funny that he's replacing his brother in New York. I think you made a perfect point. The Jets offense will mold around who their quarterback is. If it is Aaron Rodgers and that reunion happens, that I think looks a lot different than if they just stick with the Mike White, Zach Wilson combination. And then even like the health of Breece Hall might determine how much of a committee they use at running back. Are they going to go the Shanahan committee, or is it okay? Hall's the most talented. Let's put him out there. So I think his health might factor more than even what the coach wants to do. So this is another team where it's tough to glean. It's great. Almost like the Panthers to a certain extent. It's tough to know until we know what they do with the personnel. And then we'll get the context of what this coaching staff views of personnel, like where they're putting those priorities and how they match together. We still have those pieces of the puzzle.
Agreed.
I think we're down to the final three offensive coordinators. One is Dave Canales for the Buccaneers. And real quick, he's another first-time play caller. I think unlike the other first-time play callers you mentioned, this is a head coach who's in a second stint, or at least because he was with Todd Bowles, was the head coach of the Jets before, now with the Buccaneers. So he's an offensive coordinator that can learn behind someone who isn't learning to be a head coach. I think that might help Canales, but again, we have no idea what they're doing at quarterback. So that's the same thing. We don't really know. Two teams I think are kind of interesting. The New England Patriots hiring Bill O'Brien to be offensive coordinator, and then Washington Commanders hiring Eric Bieniemy as OC and assistant head coach. Real quick, the one thing about O'Brien that I found interesting, he has had a top five season with the Texans, both in rushing yards and in passing yards, completely different seasons. And I think the rushing yard season where they were top five, I'm pretty sure Arian Foster was still there. So it's again, going to personnel. And then they had a top 5 year once they had Deshaun Watson and he was firmly entrenched as a franchise quarterback, even though I think it might've been his last year in Houston. So he'll adjust to the personnel. And right now from the Patriots, it looks run. It's the same thing we said about the Colts and the Texans to a certain extent. It looks like it's a run heavy system. And agreed. I love Ramondre Stevenson. I know you're really high on him too. Damian Harris about to be a free agent. So maybe they sign someone else. Maybe they draft somebody. They took two shots in the draft at running back last year, but I'd imagine, I think it's probably a positive for Ramondre Stevenson, I think more than anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're going to, kick him up, even more. I mean, he's going to be in our top 10, rankings like he was pretty much, I would say the last half of the season. I mean, I think he's going to, but this time he's going to start up there. So he could, materialize and get in the top five as well. So, I mean, I think he's the workhorse. I mean, he's proven that he can run in between the tackles and catch the passes. O'Brien's got to be thrilled that he has the back like Ramondre Stevenson in New England.
I guess the one thing I worry about is, will he get as many targets as he did last year? But he might. I mean, maybe O'Brien does design it because he's such a good pass catching back. So I think he'll at least, if he doesn't catch as many passes, I think he'll at least be part of a more efficient offense. So maybe increase in touchdowns, just increase in yards in general. One last thing. So Eric Bieniemy, offensive coordinator and assistant head coach of the Washington Commanders. So 5 years as Chiefs offensive coordinator. And yes, this is basically entirely, there's, I think, 1 year in there where Mahomes isn't the starter, but this is basically all Mahomes' tenure. Actually, I think every season, every season it's with Mahomes as starter. With Mahomes' first year as starter was Bieniemy's first year as head coach. The Chiefs have been top six in yards, points differential. Yeah, that's it. Those three. Major things, though, right? Like almost every major offensive category. But again, that's Patrick Mahomes. He's got Sam Howell, Taylor Heineke. So maybe to a certain extent, maybe there's less personnel moves to be made with Washington, but I still think there's a lot of unknown uncertainty there. And I think on that uncertain question, I think we'll leave it here. So any final thoughts, Brad, for the listeners?
This is a great time of year. I mean, with combine and everything, keep your eyes open, keep your ears, and we'll be coming to you, every single week with our thoughts on the fantasy football season.
Yeah, we'll try to keep it to every week, maybe even twice a week for certain weeks upcoming here. But follow us along on Twitter at FPC_fantasypod. Brad's at the rundown_BH. I'm at Senra Says. We will see you all next time on the Full Press Fantasy Pod.